All right, it is a continuation of Veterans Month. This is, I guess we're a decade now doing this at FM Talk 106.5. And I remind y'all, too, if you're the veteran, or if there's a family member or friend in your life, a local veteran, please put them in touch with me. My email is Sean, S-E-A-N, at fmtalk1065.com. Send me the contact info, and let's get them on the show. And we do this every November, Veterans Month. This veterans interview is extra special because it feels like family coming into studio. A man that has been discussed by his brother and I many, many times, and to get to finally meet him in person is pretty special. Being joined by Army veteran, Lieutenant Colonel, I think correctly, Marcus Young. Good to see you, sir.
Hey, nice to be here, Sean. Thanks.
And we will spend only a portion of the show picking on your brother.
We have to do that.
Yeah, we do have to do that. Thank you, first of all, from all of us. Thank you for your service.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Just like all veterans, you know, we really appreciate the support that we get. And it really does help in our service to know that we have so many Americans behind us.
You know what's neat? Where we grew up, we have been Mobile guys, is our community here. And it was really, a light was shown on it with a debate that went on between the governor and some stuff that went on in the state. Yep. I grew up with this assumption, I guess, you know, we grew up in a place that has a battleship in our backyard. We grew up in a place that so many family members and friends served.
Right.
And we have this robust community, like South Alabama Veterans Commission, all these groups. And then you looked at other places in the state, and I guess like a dummy, I assumed that veterans were as integrated into the community elsewhere as they are here. And it's kind of special here.
Yeah, it really is. One of your guests that you had on, you know, Colonel John Kilpatrick, I think he ran the numbers, and the Mobile and Baldwin County area is the most condensed veteran service, whether it be the actual veteran or veteran family members are down in this area. So we are very unique in that regard.
It took a moment to look elsewhere because I don't know. You assume like, well, they're like this in Birmingham. Yeah, they're like this in Huntsville. No.
Yeah. Mobile is special.
It is. And I'm glad this is where I grew up. Yeah, you know, this is a great thing. I ask this of every veteran that sits down and talks with me. I got lucky to talk to some members of the Greatest Generation before they passed, World War II veterans, whole way to kids who just cycled back to the United States. So I got to ask you about your enlistment story. How'd that go? What led up to that? Was that decision? Did you wake up when you're 7 years old and said, I'm going to enlist in the Army? Marcus, how'd that go?
Well, it's kind of interesting, and it involves JY.
Okay.
Yeah, this goes back to 1987 when I was a junior in high school and sophomore in high school, and he was already in JROTC, and I wasn't. And so he and my other neighborhood friends were already doing it, so they're wearing the uniforms. I see him at school once a week wearing uniforms. Never really piqued my interest. I was walking down the hallway, and Master Sergeant Walter Pollock, I will never forget him, he's a man that changed my life, who was the JROTC instructor at the time, said, hey, aren't you John Young's brother? I was like, yes, sir. He's like, well, why aren't you in ROTC? He is. I said, well, I never gave it much thought. You know, he says, well, I'm going to get your schedule changed. I'm going to get you moved. And he did. He moved me into ROTC. At the moment in my life, I wasn't an at-risk kid. I wasn't bad. Right. I was doing anything. I was just an average Joe, middle row Joe type of student. But he birthed something in me. He says, you know, I see something in you. So I learned ROTC. I just fed on it. I just flourished.
From day one, you knew you were in the right place.
I knew it found my niche.
Okay.
I always wanted to be a policeman after watching T.J. Hooker.
Right.
You know, that was my thing back then.
Yes.
But I really found it then. So in 1988, when I was a junior, I did the delayed entry program. Now, here's where it gets interesting.
Okay.
My recruiter, Staff Sergeant Dean Perry, I won't ever forget him. God bless him. He told me I was enlisting into the Army.
Okay.
So I did the delayed entry program. He says, all right, when you graduate in 89, you know, you're going to have to show up. So I show up at the 1989 enlistment ceremony, and the lady says, hey, this is your last chance. Anyone who doesn't want to swear in now and enter in the Army, you just leave. I raised my hand. I said, ma'am, I'm already in the Army. And she says, are you really? I said, yes, ma'am, I'm already in the Army. I joined last year. She says, well, did you get an LES? I said, what is that?
So first clue. I don't know what this thing is.
What is that? You know, that's a leave and earning statement. Were you paid? I says, no, ma'am. She says, well, honey, you're not in the Army.
You haven't gotten a check. You're
haven't
not
gotten
in.
A check. You're not in.
You'd walk around and thought you're in the Army.
I thought I was in the Army. I had no clue. And so she asked me, "Do you need to call your recruiter?" I said, "Well, yes, ma'am." She said, "Step over and call him." I called him, and the guy in the office said, "Oh, Marcus, Staff Sergeant Pierre just walked out, man. Can I take a message?" I said, "Well, no, I'm at MEP station. I'm trying to enlist in. They tell me I'm not in the Army, so I'm trying to figure out what's going on." He said, "Well, I can leave a message for him." You know, there were no days of cell phones then, so they couldn't call him.
Right.
You know?
I'm going to stand by this phone and wait for you to call. Yeah.
So I sat there for 5 or 10 minutes, and they said, "Hey, you coming in or you not? Because the door's closing. We're about to swear in." So I go in and swear in, and that's the story. And
so then you were officially in.
I was officially in and never heard or seen Staff Sergeant Perry again in my life.
he's probably standing there going, "I just walked out." Right. Is that Marcus Young? I just walked out.
Left.
This kid thinks he's already in the Army.
He convinced me. Staff Sergeant, Master Sergeant Pollock and Colonel McIntyre, the other instructor, had actually gotten me 2 military institution scholarships.
Okay.
And I turned them down based on the premise that I'm already enlisted because I went to Sergeant Perry. I said, "Hey, guess what? I have a scholarship to Marion Military Institute." He says, "You can't take that. You're in the Army, man."
What you're like? Hey, wait a second. I just had to swear in again.
I right in school. I should have gone to Master Sergeant Pollock, and to this day, I don't know why I didn't explain to him fully.
Pretty funny story.
But I asked Sergeant Perry. I said, "Hey, they got me 2 scholarships." He says, "You can't take those.
You're already in the Army,
man. They'll put you in jail. You're already in the Army."
Like you didn't, and at that age, you don't have the wherewithal to go, "Why didn't I get a paycheck?"
Right. No, it totally went over my mind. Totally.
So you retired now from Army.
I retired last November, November 30th.
Okay. Now, is that going to be permanent?
Yes, it is permanent. Very permanent. Taking care of the family now.
Okay. Let's look at the Army, too, from 1989, when you officially, officially in. What's changed as you look at it from your time in the Army to retiring, from when you got in, 89, to retiring recently?
Well, it starts with the training. Throughout my career, I had a 13-year break between active service, when I was a weekend warrior.
Right, guard.
For guard service, then I returned to active guard in 2009. So it goes back to the training. During my time they call it AGR, it's the active guard service, I was the XO of the recruiting battalion, executive officer. And when I see the crop, of candidates to enter in, I think are different.
How?
When I went in, of course, I wasn't a big fella. I'm the same height, which is 5'10". I was 130 pounds with everything on me.
Yeah.
But my mentality was, this is what I want to do. I think I entered in $380 a month as a PFC.
Big money.
Yeah. And you know who had... I was sending JY 50 of that every month,
mind you. Can't let him forget that.
Can't get rid of that guy. But I think the mentality was, you heard of Rambo.
Mm-hmm.
So I was Rambro. I thought I was that guy that was going to take over and just kill all I was going to kill everybody.
Yes.
All the enemies of the United States.
Yeah, give me my knife.
Yeah, give it to me and just let me go at it.
Right.
But I believe the mentality of they didn't offer me anything. Matter of fact, the GI Bill, you had to pay $100 a month to qualify for it for 12 months. You had to pay $100 a month to get the GI Bill. So there wasn't anything they were giving us, no signing bonuses, no we'll send you to college, we'll pay off your debt, none of that.
That changed.
It changed a lot. And it only changed because we have to incentivize younger people to come into the service now. Right. So we have to give them something to attract them.
Sure.
Whereas it seems like when I was in basic training, when I've gone through that first stint of my career as an active member, as an enlisted person, was that we all wanted to do it. Mm-hmm. We're all willing to do it. We were
all
willing
to die. Yeah, you weren't coerced into it. I mean,
Not at all.
You said from the first day at Junior ROTC, you said, This is it. This is for me.
Yeah, I found my niche in life.
Then you were dealing with it later in the career with people that were doing it because it was just...
They got something, and they wanted to try it out.
Mm-hmm.
And when it didn't work, they didn't say, "Well, I'm going to finish my obligation." It's been more of a, forget it, screw it. I'm getting out. I just stop showing up or whatever.
Really?
Yeah. So I think the mentality a lot has changed in my generation of younger folks and maybe the later generations. I believe the training style had changed. Of course, when I went in, you know, drill sergeants, right, wrong, and indifferent. They could use profanity. They could curse you. They could call you all kinds of names. They can deride you. And several times, they put their hands on you.
Yeah.
And if you ever got invited behind the building to fight one drill instructor, you found out real quick there were three other ones back there.
Oh,
and, you know, the recruit came out with his not wearing properly.
Yes.
A little dirt on it.
You didn't win that one.
You didn't win.
You know, but from a civilian's view, looking at that, that was the thing growing up, and we're close to the same age, that maybe look at y'all and go, wow, that's a thing, because we knew it was hard.
Right.
Right? I mean, even though we didn't know all the details because we hadn't been through it, we go, so-and-so's brother's back, and he just got out of boot camp. We're like, ooh, he went through something real hard. Like,
right.
It made it changing. It made it special because not everybody could do it.
Exactly. And that's what makes the military and law enforcement so exclusive. You don't want everybody there.
Right. That's what makes it, right, from even makes people want to get in and achieve, but it also gives us the respect for law enforcement and the military because we know they've gone through some stuff.
Yeah, and they're ready for the fight when it happens. And I'm not saying that they're not now, because obviously we're still the most lethal fighting force in the world. But I'm saying there was a huge change from the time I entered in 1989 until the time I got out in 2024.
There's
a definite difference in the candidates, the people that are entering into the service now.
Coming right back, more with Lieutenant Colonel Marcus Young, our guest right here on Midday Mobile for Veterans Month. So welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Our guest, Lieutenant Colonel Marcus Young, U.S. Army retired. He says permanently.
Yeah,
just checking. All right. And talking about, you know, those days from when you got in to when you got out. And we did, you know, you're talking about the Pete Hegseth. We were talking about him during the break. And that big, I didn't know what was going on, call the generals into one. I was like, oh, what the heck is going on? But gives a speech. And basically, it's the things, the tenets you just talked about, too. Bringing us back up to a standard, like the standard in 1989 when you went in.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And of course, my generation, I think every generation assumes they were the best. But I think what SecDef has done is reset things back to the standards that we're used to. Not everybody can serve, and that's fine. You know, I don't think that we want everybody to serve. This is very exclusive, so you want the top tier of selections of the candidate. So I believe he put things back in order, and we really needed that. Unfortunately, as we change administrations, you know, you kind of waffle back and forth, and the military, the armed forces, doesn't have a vote in that. We just have to get behind whoever the commander-in-chief is, and we'll change as the change happens.
Right.
And that's another thing that makes the armed forces service so unique, in that no matter who our bosses are, we're gonna do the mission.
Yeah, they're your commander, no matter whether you voted the person or didn't vote for the person. They are,
right.
Yeah. And,
right.
And that, you know, that's it might be a tough thing, but that's the only way to run a military.
That's the only way to run it, is that, we all vote.
But you're citizens first, but then you're...
We're soldiers next.
Yes.
You know, and we signed a contract that we give it all, and that person has the ability to send you this place, that place, change the rules, and you just have to step in and get in line and you know, and do it.
So many veterans like you I talk to would come back and then get in the Guard.
Mm-hmm.
To talk about the Guard and what that means to you, what it meant to you to do the Guard.
The approach when I did my first tour, did almost 3 years as a PFC, doing my first tour in the active service. So when I got out, the approach that the lady that was recruiting me was like, you know, this is home-based service. Don't you want to serve your community? And I thought I still had a little bit left in the tank. So, of course, But I'm telling you, that was one of the most funniest things when I got out of active service in my first day at a weekend drill in National Guard.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. It's just like you see on Rambo. You remember the part of Rambo, the reservist that came in to try to find Rambo?
Yes.
It was that times 10.
You're like, what are we doing here?
What is this? You know, these guys don't stand in formation. They got all kinds of different wear of the uniform. But it was really funny. But the attraction that continued my service in the National Guard was that it was just that. You know, you're in your community. You're serving your community when there's a disaster. You know, you're right here at home helping home.
Yeah, you, I mean, at one point you're helping your nation,
right?
And now specifically helping Alabama,
yeah,
Southwest Alabama. Mm-hmm. As you look at that too, it's funny because you tell that I had somebody you may know. He's a Marine Corps veteran, Melvin Bell, was in yesterday and talked mm-hmm. to me about something. He's like, man, when they told me we're going for weekend drill, I packed a light pack and everything like I was supposed to with all my gear. And I got there and people were unloading TVs and microwaves. He's like, what are we doing here?
Oh, yeah, especially in November when you have the Bama game.
Yes.
You know, they have the big – they actually brought a TV.
That's what he was saying, the same thing. He went to Shelby, and they were putting stuff out. He's like, what are we doing?
I was like, what is this?
But you are ready and mobile to help out the community.
Yes.
Let's talk about, we talk about our community here for Veterans Day. We had the parade on Tuesday. Were you there?
No, I wasn't there. I was there at the dinner, you know, of course, the night before.
Yes.
Participated in a lot of those in my unit when I was at the 226 Maneuver Enhancement Brigade there on Broad Street. You know, we participated in that every year. We did a lot of great things with that. And it's really fun doing that and showcasing our equipment and what we have mm-hmm. and the type of soldiers that we put into the marching element of the parade. So it's always been fun.
It's a great marketing tool. Back to what we were really talking about. Look at, like, you know, growing up, looking at somebody's brother that came back from basic, and we'd be like, ooh, man, they're cool. Going to the Veterans Day parade, growing up and going, those guys look tough. Right. Those guys look awesome. Right. You know,
so that's what they have at the unit.
Yeah,
I didn't know they had that at that unit. You know,
it's pretty good advertising.
It really is. And it gets a chance to showcase that to our community, that those who haven't been recipients of us responding to help them in the emergency mm-hmm. or disaster situation, that they see the capability that's mm-hmm. right here in Mobile.
Yeah, and a lot of young eyes looking at that going, okay, that could be a possibility for me.
Right, yeah.
Speaking of those young eyes, let's talk about this as we close out. Your years in, you talk about the changes, but now things are maybe changing back with the U.S. military. What do you tell, and there are probably some young people listening, but mostly parents of mm-hmm. younger people listen, what would you tell them if they are thinking about this option for their children to get in?
I would certainly recommend it, especially for young men. I still believe that there's an element of discipline that you can only get and learn through that type of training where you're away from everything and everybody that you know, and you have to focus on one thing, you know, and you have to focus on one way of doing things in a team environment. Because I believe that's what our young people need. They need to learn how to interact amongst other people that are mm-hmm. different, come from different places, speak different, and all that's different belief systems. But you come together as one team. So I would still highly recommend any young person going and venturing off into the military, because I believe it definitely changed my life. I never thought I'd be doing it 40 years. But it changed my life for the good, mm-hmm. And you feel very rewarded by your service. And not many careers give you that.
Right. Yeah. You could be whatever, you know, butcher, baker, candlestick maker, and you don't have this look behind you and see all the men and some women that support, you know, you're part of this gigantic family from the earliest days.
Right.
So, man, thank you for coming in.
Hey, I appreciate it.
Next time in, we're just going to pick on your brother for the whole time?
Oh, yeah. I got plenty of stories.
Lieutenant Colonel Marcus Young, thank you for your time.
Hey, thanks for having me, Sean.